Hi, this is Dr. Tim Clinton. Thanks for listening to Family Talk. You going through a tough time right now? Can't see your way out? You think there's no hope? We'd love to talk to you. I want you to know this. Dr. Dobson has been doing this for a long time, and he really cares about you so much that we'd love to talk to you right now. You can actually call us toll-free. Our number is 877-732-6825. You're going to be encouraged. You're going to be challenged. You're going to find new hope. You know why? Because God really does care about you. He loves you. And Dr. Dobson cares about you too. Call us now, 877-732-6825.
Today on Family Talk.
Greetings, everyone. This is Dr. James Dobson, and you're listening to Family Talk. Today and tomorrow, you're going to hear from a man that I respect and admire highly. He is Dr. Ben Carson, and he's a world-renowned surgeon who currently serves as the U.S. Secretary of Housing and Urban Development. Dr. Carson is doing incredible work, and I want you to hear about his passion for helping others. A few weeks ago, my colleague, Dr. Tim Clinton, caught up with Dr. Carson at the Western Conservative Summit, which took place here in Colorado. They highlighted HUD's achievements over the past few years and how churches are often becoming the hands and feet of Jesus, even in that public arena. Here's that conversation now between Dr. Ben Carson and Dr. Tim Clinton on this edition of Family Talk.
We have an outstanding program for you today as we are gathered at the Western Conservative Summit in Denver, Colorado. I'm joined right now by our dear friend, Secretary Dr. Ben Carson. He is currently serving as U.S. Secretary for the Department of Housing and Urban Development. Dr. Carson is a world-renowned neurosurgeon and has worked as Director of Pediatric Neurosurgery at Johns Hopkins University for over 30 years. He's a best-selling author, has been honored with numerous awards, including the Presidential Medal of Freedom. Dr. Carson has been widely recognized as a successful physician, has been called a living legend, and one of America's best leaders. I would say beloved leaders. He and his wife, Candy, have been married for nearly 45 years. They have three children, three grandchildren. He's here today to talk a little bit more about his work with HUD, Housing and Urban Development, and what we can do in helping America's struggling communities. Dr. Carson, welcome.
Thank you. Good to be back
with you. Dr. Dobson sends his regards.
Fantastic. Tell him I
said hi. He thinks so much of you, and we deeply appreciate what you do.
It's mutual.
I know we're going to have you at the gathering this fall, so we look forward to that too. But as we get started, how are Candy and the kids and grandchildren?
Oh, everybody is doing absolutely spectacularly. Candy's probably busier than I am.
Amazing. Yeah. You know, the transition from pediatric neurosurgery to the public square and public service. Dr. Carson, where did the calling come from? What motivated you?
Well, interestingly enough, you know, as a pediatric neurosurgeon, I spent so much time trying to give children a second chance at life, often operating all night long, just to be depressed a few days later when I had to send many of them back into East Baltimore with lead and mold and rats and roaches and bed bugs and violence and, you know, I just felt horrible about that. And now God has provided an opportunity to do something about that environment.
You know, as you've stepped into that world, you probably had no idea what you were really getting into. But God is using you in so many ways. Dr. Carson, what are some of the big issues on your heart right now, some of the biggest challenges in society that you're really trying to press into?
Well, what people may have noticed is that at HUD, we've sort of changed the focus from just maintaining people and getting people into programs to how many people can we get out of these programs and to a position of self-sufficiency. And we're aiming everything at doing just that. And, you know, dealing with things like homelessness. There should not be homelessness in this country, but we have places like Los Angeles and San Francisco and New York where you just have excessive amounts of it. And one of the things that you look at, you say, what do these places have in common? Excessive regulation, zoning restrictions and regulatory barriers that make it almost impossible to build affordable housing. And that's why in Los Angeles, you have people making $50,000 a year sleeping in tents on the sidewalk. We can do better than this. And, you know, I'm not one of those people who says you need to get rid of all the regulations, but we need to look at them, examine them. What we've done over the decades is just put one on top of another instead of replacing one with another. And, you know, created a situation where to get from point A to B instead of a straight line, it becomes a labyrinth, which takes a lot of time, effort, and money.
I looked over the accomplishments of your department for 2018. I read these things. Maybe you could just talk a little bit about them.
I'm glad you brought that up because if you go to the website, hud.gov, and you look under the accomplishment section, you'll be blown away.
I was shocked.
You never hear any of this stuff.
That's exactly what I was saying. I didn't know what all you were involved in.
Yeah.
But reinvestment in communities where you guys go out and you were actually converting over 100,000 housing units into rental type properties
exactly,
for people.
Which saves a lot of communities, the RAD program. You know, this is a way that we can basically change the whole paradigm because, you know, in the past, the government would ride in on a white horse with a bucket of money and create these massive multifamily things with little forethought or hindsight or any holistic interventions or maintenance. And, of course, they would deteriorate and be a horrible setting for people to grow up in. But also, they detracted from the surrounding areas. We don't do that anymore. Now it's public-private partnerships. It's mixed income. It's holistic development that have all the things surrounding it that are required for people to develop. We're also, you know, emphasizing things like Section 3 now. We're writing new rules on Section 3, which says if you're getting HUD money, you have an obligation to employ, train, or give contracts to low-income people in the area.
Wow.
It hasn't been used much before because it was so complex, and people just didn't want to go through all that. We're rewriting it to make it much easier to use and incentivize people to use it. Those are the kinds of things that make a difference. We're looking at ways to get rid of the perverse disincentives because these have existed for decades in which you're getting housing assistance, you make more money, you have to report that so that immediately your rent can go up. That's not much of an incentive to improve yourself. Or if you bring another income-producing person into the household, you have to report it so your rent can go up. Don't even think about getting married. Forget about that. And, you know, that's why we have situations. There was one housing complex I went to that had about 700 units. 99% of them were occupied by single mothers, you know, because they have a disincentive to get married. This is not a good thing for our society because when you look at the Brookings study on poverty, you know, it was an extensive study, and Brookings is not a conservative institution. And they said there are three things that a person could do to reduce their risk of living in poverty to 2% or less. Number one, finish high school. Number two, get married. And number three, wait until you're married to have children. Hmm. You know, we used to know that stuff. You know, now it's like,
how about
wow.
It? Yeah, how about it?
But, you know, if it's a matter of just getting back to common sense and some of the values and principles that help to make this into a great country. But, you know, we've reached a point in our society where you're not supposed to talk about values and principles because somehow that's going to be offensive to somebody. And, you know, political correctness is in the process of destroying our society, and we got to be smart enough to recognize
it. I want to talk a little bit about that here in just a moment. But hey, another piece that was stunning to me was advancing economic opportunity through home loans and more. I think I read 669,000 people in 2018
exactly
were afforded an opportunity to get a loan.
Well, you know, the FHA is one of the biggest offices at HUD, you know, providing, you know, mortgage insurance for first-time home buyers and non-traditional home buyers is a commitment that we have. But we also make sure that we learn from things in the past. You know, the housing crisis that occurred a little more than a decade ago was because people said, everybody should be a homeowner. Well, putting a person in a home that they can't afford or are not ready for is not really doing them a favor. Yeah. You know, they lose the home, they lose their credit, and they lose their future opportunities. And as a result of that, we have fewer homeowners today than we had before the crisis started.
Another area, reducing homelessness. I was like, I had no idea that you guys make this a very intentional effort of the department.
Absolutely. It's one of our biggest areas. You know, we're committing well over $2 billion to our continuum of care homelessness assistance programs this year. And what we're looking at now are supporting programs that get good results. You know, in the past, it was only housing first. That was the philosophy. Now it's housing first, second, and third, which means, you know, yes, we need to get people off the street, but we also need to analyze why they're on the street in the first place. And then we need to fix it because, you know, the more people we can return to functionality and contributing to our society, the stronger we become as a society.
Secretary Carson, the issue of faith in your life is very prominent. I think what a lot of people don't know is how serious the administration also takes faith communities and want to engage faith communities.
Yes.
My understanding is across the administration, there are faith leaders in each of those areas,
yes.
And then there's a real intentional effort to engage churches in particular.
Absolutely.
Can you talk about what HUD's doing to try to engage?
Yes. Well, we do have a faith-based office. All the agencies do. They meet together regularly, talk about things that they can do. They're the ones who actually frequently bring to my attention, you know, some of the defects in the policies. And for instance, by just using a housing first model for homelessness, it was excluding a lot of the faith-based organizations who have homelessness programs but have requirements for people and have been very effective in getting people out of poverty also. And do recognize that this president has signed more executive orders dealing with the faith-based community and with the religious liberty probably than all the others put together. And that's something that a lot of people do not realize.
It's stunning.
Yes. And, you know, we talk about it all the time. I was with him a few weeks ago in the Beast, that's the car, the armored car. And he was saying, as long as I'm president, these people who are talking about taking and God we trust off of our coins and our bills, it's not going to happen. You know, he's actually very committed to the faith-based organizations in this country and recognizing that, you know, if you don't believe in something, you'll fall for anything.
Yeah. There are some churches out there now participating, trying to raise funds to help facilitate housing development and more for
those. I was at one yesterday.
Where are you? Tell us.
Yesterday I was in Salt Lake City at Welfare Square, where the Mormon Church has basically taken to heart what the Bible tells us to do, you know, to take care of the poor, to visit the fatherless and the widows, and to deal with their needs. So, you know, they have food processing and distribution system that goes nationwide. They're the ones who actually supply a lot of the relief shelters and things who need food, clothing, furniture, all kinds of support items for people. And really, when you think about a lot of the things that my agency does and some of the agencies do, these are things before we had these agencies that the churches used to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it's very good to reengage the faith-based community. And also, because they help us to really talk about values again, they talk about helping our neighbor, about listening to people, communicating with people. You know, if we spent more time doing that, there would be much less time to hate on people, which seems to be going on right now.
If there are people listening right now who may give leadership to an area like this in their local church, are you saying that there's a way to connect these dots together and they shouldn't be afraid of the government and government funding and more?
No.
You want to be very intentional. You want to move funds in that direction.
Absolutely. And we're very happy to do that. We want to work with them. And, you know, separation of church and state does not mean that the state and the church cannot cooperate together for the greater good of society.
Millions of believers, Secretary Carson, were stunned, I think angered, dismayed that the Born Alive Act was stalled or blocked in Congress. You responded with a statement that you said the morality of our country is at stake in this abortion debate. Most believe it will be the centerpiece of the upcoming election and more. Dr. Carson, speak to us about your your position on pro-life. I know you even talked about babies in the womb feeling pain and more. You've been very outspoken.
Well, you know, all you have to do is, you know, look at a 10-week-old fetus. 10 weeks. You already see a little nose there and little eyes and fingers and toes and the heart's beating. Now, how can you say that's a meaningless bunch of cells? And, you know, a while back, a beautiful young lady came up to my wife and she said, "Are you Dr. Carson's wife?" She said, "Yeah." She said, "Your husband operated on me when I was still in my mother's womb."
No way.
And there she was.
No way.
Beautiful, statuesque young woman who's taking care of herself. How can you then sit there and say that that is a meaningless bunch of cells? And everybody has so much potential. And, you know, one of the reasons that a lot of the abortion apparatuses do not want the mothers to see the ultrasounds is because they know that it will tug at their heartstrings. Most sacred relationship on earth, the mother and the baby. And God has placed that baby in the most protected environment that it can be in. And we've allowed people to make it seem like the mother and the baby are adversaries instead of the most close connection that people can have.
The drift of the left to even embracing infanticide. Governor Northam in the state of Virginia and the controversy that exploded around his decision. Dr. Carson, what do you think? I mean, what's happening? Why this insanity?
I think people are just not thinking it through. And, you know, they're listening to talking heads as opposed to listening to their heart. And, you know, one of the things that I discovered when I was running for president, and I traveled all over this country to every little nook and cranny, people in this country, for the most part, have common sense and have compassion, and they're willing to reach out to others. But what has happened is we have these megaphones of people who have different agendas, and they've created a silence. People are afraid to speak out because they'll be harassed, they'll be called names, their families will be attacked.
It's almost terroristic.
It really is.
It is.
And I say all the time to people, we must remember that in order to have the land of the free, you have to have the home of the brave. You got to be brave enough to stand up for what you believe in, because if you don't, it will disappear.
I know we're fighting the clock, and you've been so gracious with your time. Dr. Carson, I want to just throw, I guess, maybe a softball your way, but I think you'll get this. Dr. Dobson and I really believe there's a stirring, that maybe even an uprising is being felt among the people. There's some battle out there about whether or not we should engage in the public square, you know, that. And there's been really, like you just referenced, an effort to silence, to shame, to create a stigma on those who would stand for what they believe in.
Exactly.
What do you say to our listeners as you look to the future and the horizon? Mm-hmm. And can you give us some great news, some hope?
I say, think about your children and your grandchildren and all those who come after us. What will we leave them if we're not willing to stand up for the values and principles that made this into a great nation, that made this into one nation under God, indivisible? When we listen to all the forces of division that are out there trying to divide people on the basis of race, income, age, religion, you name it, they're trying to divide us. Divide and conquer. Jesus said it best. A house divided against itself cannot stand. Abraham Lincoln repeated it. And it's absolutely true today. And it's up to each one of us and our sphere of influence to do what we can to counter the culture of division and hatred that threatens our nation.
We deeply appreciate your stand. Know of our prayers for you, your wife Candy, your children, your grandchildren, and more. And may God continue to do a great work.
Thank you so much.
Glory.
Wonderful to be with you.
Thank you.
An inspiring end to this fascinating broadcast here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Roger Marsh, and our host has been Dr. Tim Clinton, his guest, U.S. Cabinet Secretary for the Department of Housing and Urban Development, Dr. Ben Carson. Hope you were encouraged today and motivated to care for those who need help in your community. You can learn more about HUD's many accomplishments by going to our broadcast page at drjamesdobson.org. That's drjamesdobson.org, and then click onto the broadcast icon at the top of the page. Now, while you're on our website, I urge you to click onto our blog tab when you're there as well. We have tons of informative entries from Dr. Dobson, Dr. Tim Clinton, and many of our past guests. Our bloggers focus on issues such as parenting, rebuilding marriages, religious liberties, and much more. Now, the next time you're looking for relevant and uplifting content online, read a few of our blogs at drjamesdobson.org. Recently, I've been thinking about all the destructive and oftentimes obscene materials that are available online. If you're like me, you've probably had enough of it. Well, if so, may I suggest a more uplifting alternative? Follow Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Our profiles focus on inspiring content that will bless you and your family. Catch up on past broadcasts, read engaging articles, or just enjoy the inspirational scriptures that we post. Fill your day with God-honoring material by following Family Talk on social media. It's a great alternative to all the negativity on social media that we are bombarded with each and every day. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Be sure to tune in again tomorrow for another broadcast featuring our good friend Dr. Ben Carson. You'll hear his presentation from this year's Western Conservative Summit in Denver, Colorado. It's an exciting presentation that you will not want to miss. That's coming up next time right here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
This has been a presentation of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute.
If self-esteem is something we value for our sons and daughters, maybe it would be helpful to assist them in achieving it.
Dr. James Dobson for Family Talk.
It seems like every teenager has to come along today and bump his head on the same old rock, experiencing those terrible feelings of inferiority and inadequacy. To help kids minimize that experience, I've found it beneficial to talk to them about confidence long before adolescence has arrived. For example, when a young child meets another boy or girl who's too shy to speak or even look at him, you might say afterwards, "Did you notice that Johnny didn't look at anyone when he spoke? Why do you suppose he seemed so embarrassed when he was talking to us? Do you think he doesn't have much confidence in himself?" As the elementary years unfold, you can talk openly about feelings of low self-worth and how they translate into action. For example, when someone misbehaves in school, you might ask your child about it. "Did you notice how silly David acted in class this morning? He was trying hard to make everyone pay attention to him, wasn't he? Do you have any idea why he needs to be noticed every minute of the day? Maybe it's because David doesn't like himself very much." When we train our children in this way to see others in a truer light while preserving their own dignity and sense of worth, we're laying a foundation for their own self-confidence during the inevitable storms of adolescence.
Hear more at drjamesdobson.org.
Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Tim Clinton. Thank you so much for listening today to Family Talk, a radio production of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute. I wanted to take a moment to tell you a little bit about our growing ministry here. This new institute is continuing Dr. Dobson's life work by fighting for marriages and families. It's no secret that our Christian values are under attack, and we must stand up for righteousness and biblical truth unashamedly. We believe this new institute is doing just that. Aside from our Family Talk broadcast, there are three other divisions through which we're continuing this legacy of work. The first one is our educational partnerships with colleges and universities to encourage the next generation. Secondly, is the Dobson Policy Center. It keeps you informed on how the political arena influences the family. And lastly, is our online collection of all of Dr. Dobson's work in the Dobson Digital Library. We're excited here at JDFI for this expansion. We hope you'll partner with us, and thanks for being a friend of the family.
Hello, everyone. Roger Marsh here for Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. The news comes in all shapes, sizes, and formats these days, but how do you cut through all the noise and get to the heart of the matters that affect your family? Well, come to Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk and sign up for Dr. Dobson's monthly newsletter. You'll find clarity on tough issues, encouragement for daily life, and trusted principles to help you build strong, healthy, and connected families. Go to drjamesdobson.org and sign up today. That's drjamesdobson.org.